Hello, dear listeners. Starting with this episode, we are using a different recording setup, so expect the occasional hiccup in the sound quality. We believe the new setup is beneficial to the program and hope that you enjoy it nonetheless. Now on to the show. Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Universe podcast. I'm your host Leo, here with my co-host Ellie.
Hello.
And our guest Charlotte.
Hi.
And we're also joined by Livia today.
Hi.
Hello, everybody. Charlotte, people might already know you as co-host of this show, but still, would you like to introduce yourself?
Okay. My name is Charlotte. I am part of Universe, obviously, otherwise I wouldn't be here. I write since I'm 9 years old. I recently found the first short story I ever wrote and laughed my ass off because it's hilarious. And yeah, I'm very glad to be here.
Nice to have you here. Today we're starting to mix things up a bit and we're having the reading first. Would you mind giving us the reading?
Okay, today I'm reading a poem that I wrote quite recently and it's called Ode to My City. Tram stuffed with faces, underground stuffed with smelly people, coffee house stuffed with intellectual coffee drinking newspaper reading people, street stuffed with people staring at their smartphones, park stuffed with trees, nice, air, bird, squirrel, bench, castle, cinema hall stuffed with backs of heads and messy hair, riverbend stuffed with water and fish and surfers, stand-up paddling, bus stuffed with prams and dogs, people fighting, garden stuffed with plants and walls and houses, lift in the house, see-through, who's in it? Cat stuffed with tinned food, licking lips, meowing in my ear. Bed stuffed with me, sleeping to the sounds of horns and cars. Me stuffed with dreams and thoughts and feelings.
That was really nice. There's some weird... I wouldn't say weird.
You can't say weird, it's
there's
fine.
A lot in there. It's cool because it's... at the same time a funny poem, and also there seems to be things that make you maybe uneasy, the overcrowdedness of the city.
Well, in a way, I guess, yeah. I mean, there are problems we all know in big cities with or every place that's overcrowded, but at the same time, I really like it. Recently, I talked about my... I cannot explain it, but my love for riding on the underground, it's something that's in my DNA because I've done it ever since I can remember. I'm a big city girl. I'm from Vienna. And yeah, I dream of it. I love it. It's something that's... I love the act of getting in, going somewhere and getting out and then being somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I can't explain it. And I love looking at people and looking at what they do. How do they make time pass? Most of them look at their phones nowadays, but sometimes you spot somebody who's reading or listening to music or doing some other things. So I love that big places with a lot of people, but at the same time, of course, there are a lot of cars, it's loud, you have all the pollution, people also, are rude to each other.
Also a lot of cliches when you said intellectual people
in cafes. Yes.
Exactly.
Those old Viennese coffee houses, when you go to them, you always, always, always see somebody reading a newspaper, drinking coffee, reading the newspaper. Sometimes, I mean, a long time ago, they even smoked a lot of cigarettes because now they can't anymore in the place where I go because I don't sit in the smoking section. I always sit in the non-smoking section. But yeah, that's a cliche.
Did you mean it as a criticism for that, or was it more like just observing how people are in a way divided into that?
It was more an observation, than a judgment. Yeah, because it's so interesting. You go to one place and you see people who are going to the underground with all their shopping and then a pram that they are pushing and maybe even a bicycle at the same time and you wonder, oh my God, how does that work? And then you go to a coffee house and then you see somebody very like, yeah, very posh reading Standard or something like that.
But there seems to be some irony about that, right?
Of course.
You referring to the in air quotes, intellectual people in the coffee house.
Yeah, because, I mean, that whole atmosphere of these coffee houses is so special. I think it's one of the most special things about Vienna. Because the waiters all wear suits and appear kind of very distant, and they are very unfriendly usually, because that's Vienna. So, and those people who go there also kind of fit in. Maybe sometimes there even is somebody who plays the piano. It's very, very, specific, I think.
And I think you also show that how they can differ according to the setting, kind of. Because you talked about smelly people and the underground, or, and then you move on to this posh sort of, like, culture.
Also probably somebody who read the newspaper at the coffee house goes home by riding on the underground and then also becomes smelly because they sweat in there and then they smell. That's a connection.
Uh-huh.
And that's also why I love public transportation so much, because it makes everybody the same.
Yeah.
We all use this vehicle to get to wherever we want.
Mm.
And for a short time, it makes us equal. It doesn't matter what job we have. It doesn't matter where we come from, what language we speak. We are there for the same purpose, and it kind of unites us.
It's like a mutual sphere for, like, all this kind of different people.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
I've never regarded public transportation as such a democratic institution in a way.
Well, it's democratic as long as you have a ticket.
As long as you have.
When I travel, and if I have to use the public transport, it's very interesting to sit there and look at people. And I think that's, like, coming back to what you talked about, because then you can see all this, like, different kinds of people, not just one stereotype from that country, maybe, or, like, not one place that you've seen in that city, but, like, somewhere that everyone, somewhere that people from everywhere can, like, sort of be in at the same time.
Exactly.
So that's very interesting.
I agree.
So you sort of said you found it very interesting to, or you generally love riding buses, trams, whatever. For me as an introvert, it's very exhausting to do so. I was wondering now, what do you consider yourself more of an extrovert, taking in energy from different people?
It depends.
Mm-hmm.
I think it depends on my level of trust in a way that I have with people. Strangely, on a public transportation vehicle, because I feel like we are united, this trust is more there than sometimes with acquaintances that I know.
Interesting.
I don't know why, but I've had the most hilarious and sweetest conversations on public transportation with strangers. And it was so nice because, you know, you knew you were talking now for the 5 minutes that, or 10 minutes maybe, that you're spending together. And it was nice. You talked about, oh, what are you doing? Where are you going? Oh, nice. Nice to meet you. I enjoy the rest of your life. And then it was over. But it's so nice. It sweetens your day.
Looking back to your poem, there's this line when you talk about entering the house and looking at who's currently in the escalator, something like that.
In the lift.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Where you kind of, like, want to know who's around, but it's not quite that clear. And you might know your neighbours just based on what they look like, but you don't know anything about their lives.
Mm-hmm.
That is something I find very interesting about the city life as well.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think you also, you captured the city and you captured the liveliness and the juxtapositions, and you draw a very nice picture.
Thanks.
I fully agree. It feels like it gives me the sense of what Vienna is like this crowdedness, this stuffedness, everything is just juxtaposed, the good and the bad and the beautiful and not so beautiful. I think you've really managed to bring that across by repeatedly saying everything's stuffed.
Yes.
So I would like to ask you, you did say that you really like the city life and you're a big city girl and you've lived your life here in the big city. But would you ever think of or want to escape from this whole mess, let's say? Or
I do.
City life.
I have these feelings or that urge. I'm confessing something to you now. I have a dream of one day having a house on a beach in Ireland.
That sounds very good.
Having a typewriter and a glass of whiskey. And sitting there and writing and looking outside on the sea and a storm that's coming.
Wow.
So, I can really yes, I have an urge for silence and for nature. And I need that every once in a while. My summer holiday in Greece in September was just perfect because the internet connection was very bad.
Sounds ideal.
And that I love that. When I don't have internet, I read. And then my imagination starts to go wild. Mm-hmm. I mean, wilder than usual.
Yeah, I can totally
which is
relate to that, yeah.
Not good, probably, but I love it. And just getting up whenever you feel like it, going outside to the balcony, waking up with sunrise because you wake up at 7 o'clock and that's when the sun rises in September in Greece, seeing the sunrise and then seeing the sea and smelling the air, and it's beautiful. And of course I need that to escape from my daily routine because it gets stressful. Yeah,
I feel like big cities are making us detach from the nature, especially, and for us writers or other kinds of artists, we really need to be connected to the nature and, I mean, through that to ourselves, basically. But would you ever think of moving out of the city, or would you just consider vacations to escape?
What I could imagine is living on the border of a big city. Something like close to the Danube in Vienna.
Mm-hmm. So that's the most expensive area.
I know. That's why.
Apart from
that's
the
why I would never live there because I will probably never be able to afford that.
You never know.
Unless I become the next J.K. Rowling, which is very likely, of course. but I couldn't, what I know is that I couldn't live in the countryside for the reason that I would hate to be dependent on a car.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I can totally relate.
I cannot live with myself if I'm dependent on a car for so many reasons. Of course, for ecological reasons. And also I don't have a driving license and I will never get one because I'm dyslexic and I sometimes have problems with height and length perception, distance perception, which can become quite a problem when driving a car. So I would even need somebody who drives me everywhere, which is insane because of course I cannot, whenever I want to go someplace, have somebody who drives me.
But it's also the exact opposite of the big city, so that would be a huge change.
If you do become as successful as J.K. Rowling, you can just have your private chauffeur.
That wouldn't go hand in hand with her ecological reasons.
I mean, I do understand that a car can be a useful vehicle or tool for moving or for traveling. I mean, they need a car because in their place there probably isn't a bar or anything like that, or a cinema, or just something you want to go to, which also makes sense. But then I would just think, why don't you make better bus systems?
Yeah.
Why don't you make better public transportation for the countryside?
Yeah.
That's true.
We were talking before about the contrast of cities and the nature, but that is something I don't entirely buy because contrasting humans and nature is a false dichotomy. I mean, humans are just as much nature as everything else is nature.
No, actually, what I meant was it wasn't the crowd or the people in the cities, but I feel like You always need more buildings, you always need more concrete in the city. And in a way, you're not that connected to... I mean, you have parks, you have green spots or so, but you don't really... I don't feel the smell of nature when I'm in a city. I don't... Like, I don't feel that authentic. I can feel that when I get away, I can see the difference, but...
There are those magic moments when you go someplace in the city which is... with a lot of nature, where there's a lot of green, where you have fantastic view.
Mm-hmm.
When you capture this one moment with complete silence. And that rarely happens, but when it does, it's magical.
Exactly.
True. Still, I can relate very much to what you said before about Greece and what Ellie just said. When you go places and you... suddenly you find yourself somewhere by the seaside especially, and you can hear the sea or you can hear all the birds suddenly. And it's sometimes because I spent a lot of time in Greece almost every summer during my childhood, and it was just this, it's like undescribable. But when you walk home, no matter what daytime, but especially during night, and you just hear some animals, but nothing else really, and the sea.
Yeah.
And that's it. And sometimes in a city, I feel like my head is exploding.
Mm-hmm.
I've got all these impressions, and it's all too much.
Yeah, I agree.
And you fall into that routine, kind of, and you don't really even think of going to a park or the nature to just listen. You're just running around the whole day,
mm-hmm.
and then the rest of the time you're just exhausted to do anything at all.
I think this can happen. That's the danger. Yeah, I'm sure people try to counteract it and also to go to parks because we could see how full they are. Like, people seek nature in a way. But then the question is, can you call that nature if you go to Sigmund Freud Park and it's surrounded by four streets? When there are cars of the inner city,
there's not that silence.
Yeah.
But that's very interesting that you mentioned that, because that's actually what my poem is also about, that you as person who lives in the city, you experience all these things and you become a part of it, and the city is stuffed with you, but you are also stuffed with the city.
True.
Because you have all these images that you get every day, you see a lot, you talk to people, then you watch television, you listen to radio, you talk to somebody on your phone. And that all stays with you, the cars, the horns, the sounds, the noise, and then you're expected to be able to sleep. Of course, then your sleep is better on the countryside in the silence.
That's what it all runs down to, right? Also, like in your poem where... you go from those very, like, general observations of everyday life down into your flat, into your room, into your bed even, into your head.
Yes.
Which is very special.
Exactly, because it all ends up in here, in my brain.
I mean, we've been in your brain all the time, because everything was mediated through your brain. But
yeah, true.
Can I get from... it's a journey from outside experiences to private home experiences.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you can almost see that you're consuming the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a day in the life. A day in the life of Charlotte. Is this what all your days in the city are like?
Mm-hmm.
Crowded, stuffed with smelly people?
Most of the time, yes, because most of the time I'm using U6.
But I love the U6. I live on the U6 as well. And
me too. It's always an adventure.
Yeah, it's my favorite subway. All the other subways are boring.
I find it peaceful.
I think the most boring underground line is U4 because U4, it goes from posh to posh to posh.
Yeah, that's true.
I was gonna say that's my favorite. You're so posh, Ellie.
I'm too good for that.
In the poem, you're trying to fall asleep and there's car horns, especially that you kind of separated the horns and the cars and you made the horns come before the cars. I find that incredibly ingenious.
Yeah, because that is all you perceive, right? You don't perceive the cast per se, but or maybe just something.
Yeah, or
the smoke breaking. Of the fire.
Like when somebody is listening to music in a car at night, very loudly with an open window, the first thing you perceive when you're lying in bed is the music.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize, oh, okay, it's coming from a car.
Yeah.
From a stupid person who's keeping me from sleeping.
So, I get the feeling that this is quite different from what you usually write. You usually write mostly prose, but also some poems, right? And how did it feel for you to write something different?
I welcome this surprise, because all of a sudden I just sat down and wrote, like I usually do, but it was different this time because something like this came out. And yes, I write prose mostly, but I do write poems too. The poems I usually write are different, though, in a way that I think they are more adhering to the classical structure of a poem. Most of them rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them, but no, I don't write sonnets, but they are, yeah, just classical poems, mm-hmm. like with rhymes and a few lines, and mm-hmm. that's it.
And content wise, anything similar to this one?
Maybe for the German poems I wrote, but not so much for the English ones. There's one in German that I wrote about, actually, I think. All of my poems are about love, in a way. One poem is about a lost lover, but it's also about cold hands in winter and warming them up by buying maroni, whatever that is in English,
mm-hmm.
Because they are hot and they make your hands warm. And then people talking and saying, oh, maroni look like brains. And then somebody says, yeah, and so do walnuts. And that's the poem.
That is cute.
But it's about yearning for this conversation with this person that you had
mm-hmm.
because you lost this person and you think about that moment.
Right.
That's basically what it's about. I mean, I never had a conversation like that with anyone, but it's something that I thought about when I ate maroni, I realized they look like brains. Oh, yeah. What else looks like brains? Walnuts. Okay.
So that's in a way a conversation you had with yourself.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. That's.
Yeah.
Isn't any conversation you have in some way a conversation with yourself?
Very good question.
Very philosophical.
Yes. I suppose so. Unless you're talking to somebody who is a complete stranger. Because if you talk to people you know well, they usually talk about topics that you're familiar with.
Still, you're interpreting everything somebody else says through your own lens.
Yeah, true.
Translating it into your own
thoughts. Very true.
But regarding it that way also makes one a little bit lonely, doesn't it? Because it feels like you're having a conversation just with yourself all the time and you can never get through and reach the truth, the essence of what someone just said.
But that's like a fundamental problem of being human, not being able to put your essence into words.
It just depends on the way you look at it. There's this fantastic place close to Vienna called Herrn Baumgarten, where they have a museum of nonsense, and it's called Nonseum. You should do it. It's a really great thing to do. They also have a hiking trail for lonely socks because everybody loses a sock in their life. And you're supposed to bring the lonely sock and hang it up there.
Oh, it's really,
really good. And in this exhibition of this museum, there is a telephone that's called self-conversation telephone. And it's described by saying, this is the best telephone conversation you will ever have. Because the person on the other side of the line is so sympathetic and you have so much to talk about.
Oh my god, can we do this as a creative writing society?
Can we do a group excursion?
Yeah. Yeah, please, I would love to. So as long as you're comfortable with yourself and as long as you are your friend, I think there's no harm in being with yourself or being alone with yourself.
And I think even that lover you talked about could refer to yourself, because in a way you're with yourself and you love yourself and you're your lover in a way.
That's true. But
what if my ideas bore me to death and I just want to get someone else's ideas and learn something new and different and not just repeat my own self-pitying talk?
Then, dear Livia, you come to the Friday Universe sessions and your problems are solved.
True.
The promotion.
Can we have the jingle?
No, but sometimes I struggle. That's something that I find so immensely frustrating. Namely, feeling that you don't even entirely understand yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I don't know, do you feel like you have a clue of what the entirety of yourself even is?
I must say that I do. But I think I'm very, very alone with that answer. Because most people I know would say they have no idea who or what they are. Because I knew what I wasn't good at, and I started to discover what I was good at, because I started to write when I was 9. Because I had that weakness with numbers, I developed this creativity and, with words. So actually, a lot of those questions that people ask themselves still at my age, or maybe even when they're 70 or 80 years old, like, who am I? What am I good at? What do I want with life? I've asked myself all those questions. And I must say that now I'm very comfortable with myself and I know who I am and what I want and what I don't want.
That's an amazing thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do believe in something that's called productive suffering, in the sense that those traumatic situations, or I'd rather say eras in your life, teach you something fundamental about yourself. I still find it for myself quite difficult, or to, like, I would say the things I'm good at or bad at are only just a part of who I am. There's so much more around this. I don't even know what there is, how far I can go, how deep I should dig, because it can also be very hurtful, and psychoanalyzing yourself can also get very dark.
Of course, yeah.
But it's a never-ending process, I think. That's why when you said, like, what if I'm tired of being in a loop with my own thoughts, mm-hmm. and then maybe need somebody else. Of course, you would need somebody else at some point in your life. But it's, like, never-ending with your own struggle or with you.
And, okay. I mean, you always surprise yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You, at some point, you will have a thought that you didn't expect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Or you have a feeling that you didn't expect, and then you can have something else to think about, and then it's not boring anymore.
Yeah, true.
It's embracing your own change also.
Yeah, exactly.
Discovering new things about yourself.
Yeah. And I think some things are in there, and somehow, unless you search for them or you talk to yourself, they don't come out. Like, they're just there somehow in the background, but you don't really find out until you actually look for them. Mm-hmm.
Or something traumatic happens.
Then
those things are triggered and, like, thrown out, coming out into your consciousness in a way.
Yeah, and I think there are things that one might never be able to deal with, because they're part of your personality, mm-hmm. and they are inscribed in you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something hard to grapple with, that not all suffering is productive. There is such a thing as suffering that's just pure suffering. It doesn't lead to anything. It has no good outcome. There's nothing to learn from it. It's just what it is, and you can't do anything about it.
I guess what you can learn from that is that it passes and that it makes you stronger.
That it won't stay like that forever, yeah. But I know what you mean, like, that sometimes this self-imposed suffering you choose because you think it fits your situation, instead of turning yourself around or giving your, like, putting your fears behind or working through them. I think suffering can sometimes also be, I wouldn't call it like comfortable choice, but it's the one where you sometimes don't need to confront things or work through them or make a step forward. I know that from a friend of mine who's just, you know, bathing in things that could be changed. I think that is a shame, and it's sometimes very sensitive people being like that, because suffering seems to be an inherent part of their everyday life already.
Yeah, I agree. Nobody can help them apart from themselves.
If they don't do
anything, then they must stay the way they are, unfortunately.
Yeah. But it's just the most difficult part, right, to watch somebody suffering, and then you're like,
I want to take
you out there, but I can't, because only you can.
Yeah. How this line in the song that was very famous a couple of years ago, what's it called? Somebody That I Used to Know. And he says, you can get addicted to a certain kind of sadness. And I think that applies.
It's like very almost well. Like a melancholy that becomes your comfort zone and avoiding you from facing the pain. But I also heard something, I don't know if it was the song lyric or if it was just like from a poem, but it said the only way to avoid pain is to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, avoiding maybe is not a good word here, but like get rid of it at least is to go through it. So unless, I mean, I do believe that some things are thrown in our ways just for us to work on ourselves. And I think that that's the whole purpose of life, because it's never ending process. You just have to keep on working on yourself and get to know yourself. And it's not enough, seriously. Even if you keep working until you're 80, you're never there. So I feel like unless you actually find a way to work on them, I mean, you don't have to get over them, just know them and know that like when the pain comes, like you just know how to endure it, how to go through it, even though maybe you don't get over it. But so I feel like those things, like they all have a reason. They just for us to work on them.
Maybe it's not so much about getting rid of the pain and getting rid of all the problems, but being better equipped to work through them.
Yeah. How did we end up talking about such
philosophical
sad things, like suffering,
especially
and pain
in connection with your poem?
Yes.
I'm so sorry about that.
But I mean, it's a compliment for me, because I made you feel something.
You definitely made us feel something. Well, I think we'll end this episode on this very philosophical note and leave our listeners maybe thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hopefully not devastated.
Hopefully not devastated.
This was episode 4 of the Universe podcast. If you enjoyed it and would like to hear more of us, make sure to subscribe to the Universe podcast wherever you listen to it. While you're at it, we'd be delighted if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The reviews on iTunes help people discover our podcast. And tell all your friends about it. Comments? Questions? You can reach us on Twitter, we're at PodUniverse. On Facebook, or on our email address, podcast@universe.univ.org. This podcast was edited and hosted by Leonhard Engelmeier. The co-host was Elif Melzkabalji. Our guest was Charlotte Zertz. The editorial board for this episode was made up of Libera Regen, who also joined us in this episode. I hope you visit this planet in the universe again. In the meantime, stay safe in space. Thank you for listening.